And that is the perfection of yoga, which is actually, which can be also called bhakti yoga. This is interesting, but I don't want to get into this now. So what is the Yoga Sutras? What are the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali? First of all, we understand who is Patanjali. Patanjali, according to the tradition, but also I read it from Prabhupada, that he is considered as an incarnation of Shankarshan, who is the snake on which Lord Vishnu is laying on. So he is not different than Balaram himself. And it is said that the appearance of Patanjali was on the palms of his mother Gonika, because she wanted a child to instruct from all her knowledge. So when she was praying in this sacred river, she picked up the water, and from in the water there was a snake, and then the snake became this child who was known as Patanjali. And Patanjali is the one who compiled all the Yoga Sutras from these traditions. So we understand the authorized position of Patanjali in explaining the yoga system. And so if Patanjali is known as Shankarshan, but I also heard sometimes he's also known as Lord Shiva. But I didn't find the references for that, so I didn't introduce that in the dissertation. So if he is Balaram, so there is so much devotion involved, and that's why it is understandable why the concept of Ishvara Pranidhana, which is present in the stage of Niyama, the second limb of yoga, has so much relevance for Patanjali. Ishvara Pranidhana means surrender to the Lord. So we find the concept of surrendering to the Lord in the second stage of the Ashtanga Yoga of Patanjali, of the yoga tradition. So it is also, it could be possible to inquire, was Patanjali a Vaishnava? Because if he was Shankarshan, then he must have some connection with Vishnu, so he must have been a Vaishnava. But Patanjali is actually very careful to not put the name of any deity, but rather to keep this choice very open to the practitioner. And that's why he often suggests to focus on the Lord, to keep this Ishvara Pranidhana within the heart throughout the whole practice in order to attain the goal. But he also comes to a stage where he says, but if you want, you can divert your attention, your focus on something else. But it's much more easier if you focus your attention on the Lord, because by focusing on the Lord, you will get the mercy. And the mercy, and also this special taste with the Lord, which makes the practice much more simple to perform. But Patanjali seems like the new age type of preaching, which is very open. It's like, yes, you know, we accept everything. You follow everything, but actually the final goal is this. But he does give the different alternatives to different type of people. And it is also explained that in the Ashtanga ladder, if a person doesn't focus on the concept of Ishvara Pranidhana, then he enters into this impersonalism and he loses his identity. And that's when that happens. But that's not actually what Patanjali is suggesting as the highest goal in yoga, because he says that samadhi is attainable with the Ishvara Pranidhana. So with the concept of surrendering to the Lord, then a person is able to attain to the highest perfection. And in that stage, one is able to see the Lord. And that's what happens to Dhruva Maharaj when he gets instructed by the sage Narada Muni. He is actually being instructed to perform, to practice Ashtanga Yoga. And he, Dhruva Maharaj, starts practicing Ashtanga Yoga, and then he sees the form of the Lord. And it is explained that by seeing the form of the Lord, it is possible to attain love and devotion to God, and thus a person becomes a devotee. So yoga does give the highest perfection of life, which is the same perfection that is given by bhakti yoga. And this is also found in the Prema Pradeep of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, where he describes the goal of Ashtanga Yoga and Bhakti Yoga as the same. So the goal is prema. So this is like pure love for God. But there is a difference, in and Bhaktivinoda Thakur expresses this difficulty, which is that in the Bhakti Yoga, you start practicing Bhakti in the very beginning of the stages. So Bhakti is present immediately. So it's much more easy to focus on Bhakti when you are starting to practice Bhakti in the very beginning. But in the Ashtanga Yoga, first you have the Yamas and the Niyamas and the Asana. So you are first dealing with the mind and senses, and then you are coming to control your body, and then you are coming to Pranayama, so you are controlling your mind, and then Pratyahara, which is still the controlling of the mind. And then only the last three stages of Dharma, Dhyana and Samadhi, one person starts getting the highest levels of yoga, of the goal. And in these stages, if a person still hasn't developed love for God, the person is lost. Especially because yoga gives mystic powers. So mystic powers are something very difficult to deal with, especially if the ego is still very strong. The mystic powers bring the person further away from the process of yoga. So Prabhupada, or also Bhaktivinoda Thakur, they repeatedly say how difficult it is to not fall from the path of yoga, because this, especially because of these mystic siddhis, because they capture the person and they stuck the person in the process and they can't go further on. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur suggests just practice bhakti yoga, because you the process is much more safer than anything else. But then I came to a point when Krishna is saying that, you know, it's easy to give mukti or liberation, but it's much more... So it's not Krishna saying that, maybe he says that, I don't know that. He's saying that with it's much more difficult to attain a devotional service, because through devotional service, Krishna surrenders to you. Krishna gives himself to you. So it is much more easy to attain mukti rather than attaining Krishna himself through bhakti yoga. So I saw there was a little contradiction in this, because in one sense it is said that yoga is not recommended because it is much more difficult and you attain mukti, but it is also said that it's much more difficult to practice the bhakti yoga devotional service because you attain Krishna. Krishna is actually chained by your love, so it is much more difficult to attain to that state. And it is true that there are few bhakti yogis. There aren't bhakti yogis floating everywhere. There are actually few, and this state is very difficult to attain. So I did think that actually any kind of yoga practice is actually difficult to attain. Either it is bhakti, or it is jnana yoga, or karma yoga, or ashtanga yoga. They are all difficult. I would like to come to see And this was very interesting for me. I really relished this research when finding the Ashtanga yoga in Bhakti yoga. So I wanted to put these two together and see, is Ashtanga yoga present in Bhakti? And I also did research if Bhakti yoga present in yoga. And it was incredible how these were, Bhakti is very much present in the yoga tradition. And I also see how the yoga or the Ashtanga is present in the Bhakti tradition. And I brought this to a very, very high level, up to the point of bringing the Ashtanga to the highest practice of bhakti, of prema bhakti, which is the bhakti experienced by the gopis or Lord Chaitanya. So in my conclusion, I have Chaitanya as Ashtanga yogi. I came to that extreme of bringing Chaitanya as in the platform of Ashtanga yogi. So I will tell you how I reached to that stage, and it is very interesting actually. We see in the stages of yama and niyama how there are like different elements in these stages, and we see that Lord Chaitanya is actually following all these rules and regulations of yama and niyama. He was a renunciate, and he was into I didn't elaborate so much this on my dissertation, but I did make like a whole research on this. So you see, like also the gopis, they when they hear the flute of Krishna, they run away. And in order to follow the moral conduct of Dharma, Yoga Maya is manifesting their material bodies, and their material bodies remain with their husband, and then they are actually going to meet Krishna. And by doing that, they are maintaining this purity. They are maintaining this, they are following the Dharma, the moral conducts of Yama and Niyama. And we see also another type of gopis who get this purification by burning in this fire of separation. So we see this in the gopis, and then we come to the stage of asana. And if we see what is the meaning of asana, is Prabhupada describes as a posture that helps a person to meditate. And we see the gopis, every movement, every posture that they were taking up was connected with Krishna. They would often represent pastimes of Krishna when they were madly intoxicated or in love with Krishna. They would take up these postures in which would remind them of Krishna. They would even come to the point of, and this is in the samadhi state, where they start saying soham, I am Krishna. And we see this very much in the yoga tradition. They often repeat this mantra, okay, so let us all chant soham. So, you know, of saying like, I am that, and often they also think I am that intending love, I'm God. And it is actually true, even the gopis are saying that, I'm Krishna, but it is said that actually this soham is a different understanding, it's an understanding of devotion. It is so much devotion that the person is so much absorbed in the personality that the person is almost identifying with the personality. But it's not an ontological meaning of identity, because they keep their identity. It's like it's just like a total absorption in Krishna consciousness. So we see that also with Lord Chaitanya, when he's dancing in ecstasy, and Prabhupada says that pranayama is the perfect pranayama is the dancing in ecstasy. So we see like this, all these like postures that also Lord Chaitanya is taking by reacting as the gopis, especially we see that in the Ratha Yatra festival and in different ways when he's so absorbed that he's taking roles, postures. And so this is the asana. And pratyahara is easy to understand because it's the withdrawal of the senses, and both the gopis and Lord Chaitanya were very much able to do that. And in the stage of dharana, which is this concentration, is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was constantly concentrated on Krishna, and also the gopis, they were constantly thinking of Krishna. So we see this state with them as well. And with dhyana, this meditation, but this is a meditation in action. And the gopis were constantly in meditation of Krishna, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as well. They were constantly in this deep meditation. And they both were constantly absorbed, which is the state of samadhi in Krishna. So we see that both the gopis and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were perfected yogis from the very beginning stages of the Ashtanga ladder. And this is actually what is the highest goal of yoga, and with Patanjali is suggesting to bring this concept of Ishvara Pranidhana from the very beginning. And if we hold on that, hold on this essence of bhakti throughout the whole ladder, then we attain this pure devotional service, which is bhakti yoga. So ultimately Ashtanga yoga could actually also be defined as bhakti. So, because as Bhaktivinoda Thakur also says, the goal is the same, is prema, is this love. So I thought this was very interesting to notice sometimes. Sometimes we tend to just see one aspect of the tradition and see, okay, this is yoga and the goal is the impersonal concept, so we just reject the yoga, it's not good for our practice. But it's actually also useful for the practice. But what Prabhupada often says is to be careful to not... He doesn't suggest to practice it because it deviates one's attention. It is very easy... we can be very easily distracted by the process. So, oh, the clock is not here. Nice. And so there are many references in the Bhagavad Gita and in the Bhagavad Purana, which is the Srimad Bhagavatam, where Krishna is, where Krishna is referred as Yogeshvara, which means the Lord, the Master of Yoga. We have many, many references in the Bhagavad Gita, and we have many, many references in the Bhagavatam, especially on the 10th canto, 11th canto, and 12th canto of the Bhagavatam. We have different references of Krishna being Yogeshvara, and the gopis are considered in this article of Garuda Prabhu. He was saying the gopis as the masters of yoga, so they are known as Yogeshwaris. So it was interesting, like, to see like this Yogeshwaris, because they mastered the process of yoga, and it's true, because they did attain the highest perfection of yoga, which is total absorption and devotion to the Lord. And I also found this also did this comparison between Lord Chaitanya as yogi and yogeshwara. And in this, I entered into the esoteric topics of Krishna being non-different from Radharani, because he is a combined form of Radha and Krishna, Krishna and the mood of Radharani. So Krishna is known as yogi, as a devotee, in the sense of a devotee. A devotee is a practitioner who is practicing the practice of yoga. And now you can start noticing that I am not actually differentiating anymore between yoga and Ashtanga or Bhakti. I just say the word yoga because ultimately the goal is the same. So Chaitanya is defined as yogi because he is as a practitioner, as in the role of a gopi of Radharani. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as Yogeshwara, which means as God. So because he is Krishna himself, and Krishna is often defined as Yogeshwara, the master of yoga, and he was the master of the gopis. So he is described from Garuda Prabhu as Yogeshwareshwara, the master of yoga, because the gopis are the master of yogas, and Krishna is the master of the gopis. So this is a very, very, very short summary of the dissertation. There is much more I did. I went through also the concept of yoga according to the to Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, and Paradeva Vidyabhushana, what they think about bhakti and how they consider jnana yoga to be connected with bhakti yoga. And they say that it is actually an essential element for bhakti. And I also went through the Vedantic refutation of Paradeva Vidyabhushana to yoga. And I actually, in that case, there is a whole article describing how yoga is refuted, is not according to the Vedantic tradition. So they are actually refuting the yoga tradition from the whole perspective of authority. And so I refuted the refutation of this yoga being refuted in the Vedantic tradition, because in this refutation, David Bukta, he's a devotee also, and he is saying that actually yoga is being refuted because it doesn't have authoritative scriptures. It says that it is actually a smriti, not a shruti, because shruti is the revealed knowledge, so it is superior to the smriti, which is not revealed. So I actually proved that yoga is also shruti text, and thus what is in the concept of yoga is also accepted. Even in the Vedantic tradition, because Baladeva Vidyabhushana is part of this Vedantic tradition, he's coming to different statements of, you know, the nature of God and the relationship between the jiva and Brahman. But we see in the Vedantic tradition itself, for instance, with Shankaracharya, that even in the Vedantic tradition itself, there are different conceptions which are different from one another. So, and even in the Vedantic tradition, it is coming from the Shruti knowledge, but anyways, the conclusion seemed to be different even within the Vedantic tradition. So sometimes we have, what I notice is in the Vedantic tradition, sometimes we have this impersonal type of conclusion with Shankaracharya, and we have this Vishishtadvaita with Ramanujacharya, and we have this completely dualistic conception with Madhva. And then we see in the yogic tradition, we have this impersonal aspect in one side, and then we have the personal aspect in the other side. So we have these both elements in one tradition, which Patanjali is actually giving us the free will or the choice to choose. Which one do you want? Which one do you feel more inclined to follow? So it is not so separate as in the Vedantic tradition, but in one tradition itself, it's giving the possibility to choose whatever the soul is aiming for. So, I would conclude with saying that there are different processes of yoga suggested for the different yugas or these cosmic cycles, and so in the Satya Yuga, the goal of self-realization was possible to achieve through meditation and Raja Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga, and in the Treta Yuga by performing elaborate sacrifices, in the Dwapara Yuga by worshipping the deities, and in the Kali Yuga by chanting the holy name of Krishna. And the essence of this chanting the holy name is Bhakti Yoga. And I explained before how Bhakti Yoga is the essence of all the other yoga systems. So the chanting is the essence of bhakti, which is the essence of all the other yoga systems. And not only that, but bhakti is the essence of all the Vedas and the Upanishad, the Bhagavad Purana, is the essence of the essence of everything. So finally, the chanting of this mantra, the Hare Krishna mantra, is bringing this essence, and this was being brought by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, who is defined as Yogi and Yogeshwara. So he's bringing the essence of the tool of the yogic perfection through the chanting of the holy name. And I just would like to quote one verse from the Bhagavad Gita. In the sixth chapter, a yogi is greater than the ascetic, greater than the empiricist, and greater than the fruitive worker. Therefore, O Arjuna, in all circumstances, be a yogi. And of all yogis, who abides in me with great faith, worshipping me in transcendental loving service, is most intimately united with me in yoga and is the highest of all. So when we read about this yoga, it is meant as, at least how I understood it, it's the yoga that gives the goal as prema, the yoga that is able to give the highest goal of life, which is prema, or total absorption and devotion to Krishna. So I would stop here, and I thank you for your attention, and I would like to ask you if you have any questions, comments, or corrections. I'm happy to hear that. Thank you. Yes, Prabhu.
How do you reconcile the definition of bhakti yoga, pure devotion service? I mean, pure devotion service is explained that pure bhakti is devoid of yoga and dharma. With Jesus explained, how do you explain that?
Very nice question. I also read that bhakti is independent from all the other processes. But then you see, for instance, with Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, Baladeva Vidyabhushana, which are our pillars of, you know, our tradition, we see that in order to attain bhakti, it is essential to get the knowledge, to get the jnana yoga, to get this jnana. So Bhakti is definitely independent and alone it can bring you to the highest perfection, and there is absolutely no doubt about that. But in another sense, you can also attain to that state with the other processes, which are aid or helps. It's like using different instruments in the process, which can bring you to the goal. But that goal in itself doesn't really need to have these processes, but you are free to either do it or not do it. Like, for instance, by practicing yama and niyama, well, that's actually what we are also doing. You know, we are following the four regulatory principles, and we are trying to control our mind, and we are trying to control our senses. Why? Because we want to reach to the pure devotional service. But we do because we are actually part of the sadhana bhakti. We are, you know, practicing it. We need actually this practice. But there are other people who actually don't need this sadhana bhakti. They are like completely in this spontaneous devotion, and for them it's just, you know, that. But some people, for some people it can be useful. And I see personally, my personal experience, I'm not such a good yoga practitioner, but I do see the difference from if I'm practicing asana and pranayama, how actually my chanting is much more better, because it's much more focused. All the pranas, the energies of the bodies are relaxed and the mind is calm, and there is much more focus. But if I was able to actually attain to that focus just by doing that, it's perfect, and it is actually possible. Yes?
I'm being confused about interrelation between Ashtanga Yoga, Dhyana Yoga, Hatha Yoga. Is it the same, or is...
I was speaking with Bhaktivedanta Pura Maharaj, and he sent me this exact sentence: yoga is yoga, whether it is called Ashtanga Yoga or Bhakti Yoga. So, what does yoga mean? You know, if we understand the meaning of yoga, which means to connect, to unite with the Lord, to absorb, to direct our thoughts and mind towards Brahma, the Supreme, then we understand that that is the goal. And that is, you know, these processes are ultimately united in the essence, in the goal, not in the process. Because, like, for instance, any other religions, you can say, oh yeah, actually this is better than this, this is better than this, and this is actually completely different from this. In one external sense, we can say, yes, you know, they are different. Maybe this is more easier, this is more difficult, this is more complete, this is more incomplete. But what is actually the essence of what has been taught? And the essence is finally to actually love God, to surrender to God. And so we do find that in the yogic process, and that's why I'm linking them in the essence, in the goal. Well, that's in nowadays, like Hatha, they say that it is coming from Ashtanga and it has parts, but it is it also is very much more different and it's much more technical. And Hatha Yoga is definitely much more deviating than, it's much more difficult, easy to be deviated because it enters into lots of these mystic siddhis. And well, like the other things are like, you know, like dhyana means meditation. So you can see that aspect in every single place, you know, like in that you can see jnana in every single place, you can see bhakti, you know, like in the different places. So in that way you can link them. Someone else? Oh,
you
say that many saints in India were manifested ecstatic love for Krishna and manifestation of ecstasies.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering, what is the difference between them and Chaitanya?
I tell you the truth. When I read that book, I spent days crying because it completely bewildered me. I was so confused because I was reading this and then I'm reading about Lord Chaitanya's like ecstatic symptoms and then we come to like these sages, 19th century, I don't remember the names, but I read a few people. And they have these incredible mystic experiences and siddhis involved, and they have they even have like references of like people from the Chaitanya Charitamrita saying, yes, Lord Chaitanya will appear again in this place, but this time for the Grihasthas, because now he was more into the renunciate order. And you know, they come with like so many like incredible like statements. And then you see this person like into complete ecstasy, and then I was thinking, so how come like these people are entering into this whole like ecstatic symptoms and mystic experiences, and there are so many like followers saying that he is God, or this other person is God, and Lord Chaitanya himself in the combined a version of Gadadhar Pandit and Lord Nityananda himself is here, you know? And I was thinking, what is this? And I was thinking, there is so much speculation going on. And then I started so much doubting about even Lord Chaitanya. I thought, well, they say that Lord Chaitanya is a combined form of Radha and Krishna. And here they are saying that this guy is a combined form of Gadadhar, Pandit, Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Nityananda. And then they are like, you know, giving references and all these kind of things, which bewildered me. It really bewildered me. And then I went to speak with Kadamba Kanana Swami. I was like, please, Maharaj, help me. And he said, yeah, it was a very, very long conversation. But, you know, he said, in Bengal especially, people have lots of tendency to divinize everything. You see something and it becomes God, and this becomes God, and this becomes God, and so that is very difficult to know. But with Lord Chaitanya, we have incredible, incredible amount of references. And we have this incredible amount of biographies with different people saying the same things. And like, and it's not that they were like, you know, they were really like bringing in the aspect of Lord Chaitanya so much. And it's not actually possible to do that if he was just a human. This is like the biggest biography ever. Like so many people actually focusing on these biographies. And we actually have personal experience of his being divine because by following the path that he has given us, we can directly experience how Krishna consciousness is working. We can directly feel how the holy name is the essence of the whole Vedic tradition. And we can feel that it actually transforms our heart. It actually gives us, and it can lead us to the highest stages of bhakti. And I'm sure that we all did experience at least like a fraction of love and devotion to God through the holy name. And so it is ultimately about faith, because if we could start wondering, oh, is that true, is this true, and what about if this scripture is actually, you know, written by someone else, and what if this is actually not a Shruti, and, you know, we could doubt everything and anything in this world, everything could become relative, but ultimately, by having, faith is a very important element, because how can you, you know, like faith is something that can be attained only by practice. And these people, and we can see, the only way we can know if this is true or not is by our practice. You know, these academics, they enter into like all these argumentations of, you know, God or not God and what is this and what is that, but they don't practice, they don't know, they are just like seeing the external, superficial aspect of it. They don't know about that. But for us, we, Prabhupada gave us the possibility to actually practice it. By, we can see that by ourselves. You know, you don't have faith, just try it out and see if Lord Chaitanya is God. And you know, if the other guy is God, well, try it out. Maybe you will just see like what happens out of it. You know, there are so many people in India who like come up as God, but then they are completely, you know, like doing like nonsenses and involved in these sahajiyas tendencies. And very often there is also this, you know, aspect of, especially in the sahajiya tradition, of identifying oneself with the divine couple. So they are actually entering in this sexual intercourse by saying, well, I'm Radha, you're Krishna, we are gopis, and you know, so they are entering into this, and it is a very, like, it is a huge speculation because Lord Chaitanya never said that, but this is also a concept that impersonalists have by identifying themselves with God. So they say, well, I'm God, you're God, you know, so when there is a union between us, there is actually, they say that it is valid, that, you know, they have like scriptures backing up with that. But then it's up to us of what are we following? Are we following this path or this other path? Are we following the impersonal path where everybody, you know, like suddenly becomes God, or actually we are servants of God? So, you know, there are many, many things that can be seen, and knowledge is very wide, actually. You know, like and that's my experience in Radhadesh, like you get things from so many different angles, and you know, so like everything keeps like evolving, and you keep thinking, and you know, what is this, what is that, and it's interesting. It's like a mental adventure, actually. But would you like to say something about this?
No, I think you expressed it well. I mean, in India, there's every other person is God for some reason or another. And there are many different claims, but two different things. I mean, one is that with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you find a strength of evidence and description that you don't find with other saints. It means you have some rumors, their immediate followers will say, he's God, I heard like this, like that, he appeared to me in my dream, and he said he was Krishna. But it's just one person's mind, one person's dream. With Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you find basically the greatest scholars of that time, of that period, from Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya to Prakashananda Saraswati to Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, and all of them are describing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's character, his background, his life in detail, to the extent that when you have, as you mentioned, when you have so many different authorized sources and advanced personalities who are in themselves so advanced and are saying this person has such and such character, and in this way we can see is the Supreme Lord, then we have to take it very, very seriously. So in terms of the objective evidence for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it's just so much greater than any of these, you know, so-called ideas that just pop up coming here and there. And then the second thing you find, I think, a big difference between Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and other people who claim to be the Supreme, or whose followers claim to be Supreme, is that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave a very strict example of practice in terms of proper behavior of sadhana, bhakti, and yama, niyama, these things you were talking about. Whereas most of the others who claim to be God, it just ends up being a license for sense gratification. So both for the followers and for the person who is claiming to be God. So it's just like you mentioned, it becomes, oh, I am Krishna, therefore I can do whatever I like. Or we believe in bhakti, in prema, and I am Krishna, so therefore you can do whatever you like, because it's all about love anyway. And so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you see that he's presenting the highest thing possible, but then the basis of that he's giving, the actual practice, is very, very clear and very, very strict. So the nice example that you mentioned was that, you know, someone may say, oh, that was, now I'm coming, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is coming again for the grihasthas. What does that mean? Ocheti Mahaprabhu was too strict in terms of his practice. Now let's do something a little more relaxed where we can enjoy the senses more, right? So that's you see the uniqueness in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's character, is that, okay, he's giving us the highest thing, but he's giving a basis in strict sadhana where no one in any religious tradition can say, oh, this is wishy-washy, it's really iffy. You know? So these two things, you see, is very different in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu than in other people who claim to be God, because such people exist throughout history, and they'll continue to exist, people who claim to be God. But you won't find both of these qualities present within them.
Yeah, thank you, very, very nice. I think I have to end, yeah? So thank you very much for listening, and please forgive me for any offense. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.